Hello, welcome back to the Masonic Roundtable, a weekly program where Masons from around the world get together to talk about Masonic news and opinions in a friendly and social manner. As a reminder, the thoughts and opinions expressed here are solely the opinions of the participants and do not represent any Grand Lodge statements or positions. Make sure you keep your conversations open for the public and on the level. To interact with us, as always, we love seeing you guys chat from around the world. So welcome to all of you watching live on Facebook as well as live on YouTube. So we love talking with you over there. And if you want to show us some love with a super chat, that'd be cool too. Let's see. You know me. My name is John Rewark. I'm a past master of the Patriot Lodge, number 1957, in Fairfax, Virginia. Handing it over to Jason for his introduction. Good evening, Jason.
Good evening, John. How are you?
I'm great.
That's fantastic. My name is Jason Richards. I am a past master of Acacia Lodge, number 16, in Clifton, Virginia, a member of the Colonial Lodge, number 1821, in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, try zooming in a little bit more because I still think we can see parts of your body. So that was not an actual son of a gun. Okay, while Jason figures out his beautiful camera techniques, we're going to switch over to Hammy for his introduction. Good evening, Hammy.
Good evening, Mike Hambrick to Hammy, Mike the intern here. I am the senior warden and lodge education officer for Lakeshore Lodge number 307. In Madison, Ohio, and the senior steward for Kessel Island Virtual Lodge. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening. And would you do us the honor of announcing our special guest tonight?
Yes, and tonight our special guest is Brother Jad Kopinski from Ohio. He is the current chairman of the Education Committee of the Grant for the Grand Lodge of Ohio, and he was just recently elected to the first vice presidency of the Midwest Conference on Masonic Education.
Dun, 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 dun. Excellent. Good evening.
And he can tell us anything else cool about himself.
Yeah, who are you? Okay, hold on. Let me make sure my... Oh, there we go. I fixed it on my end. Go ahead. Oh, still can't hear you.
No, you didn't fix it on your end, John.
There we go. I did, hey. I swear.
Here's what it is. See, you see, it was a close-up on Jason's eyes. I just got lost.
Got distracted,
and, you know, I just was like, I was gone. Sorry, man. I was just gone.
McDreamy, we call him.
Oh, yeah, that's how I won my wife over with the smolder.
yes, my name is Chad Kopinski. I'm a past master of Paramount number 25 in Athens, Ohio, and I do have the honor of serving the Grand Lodge of Ohio as the chairman of the Grand Lodge Education Committee, and I have the honor of being the first vice president of the Midwest Conference on Masonic Education, which just had their first virtual conference last weekend.
Huzzah!
It's an honor to be here.
Excellent. Well, it's great to have you. So before we get into tonight's topic, do you want to give a special shout out to all the patrons who've been supporting the show? You guys are awesome, by the way, in case we haven't said that before. It's been great to, you know, to interact with some of you guys. In fact, just this past, like, 24 hours, we've been nerding out on some Masonic research topics over in the private Facebook group, looking up all sorts, going into like Agrippa's books from like 1533. So if you want to go check out that conversation, head over to patreon.com/themasonicroundtable and chip in a few bucks and we can nerd out together. So we'd love to see you over there. Tonight's topic is about, what is it? There's some sort of Midwest conference that just happened, apparently. So
it is. It's,
okay.
It's a thing.
It's a big thing.
It's a
huge.
Well, it's a bigger thing now. How about that?
That's great.
What it was, what it is now, and what it's going to be. I sound like I'm quoting a line from, like, you know, Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what is it?
What is it? It is a conference that's held once a year amongst 12 jurisdictions in the Midwest and in Canada. And what it is intended for is for the education officers of those states to come together for what you would, you know, basically it's a summit meeting. It allows for the these member jurisdictions to give a report about what they're up to, but also to get that sort of support, exchange ideas, exchange best practices, listen to world-class level speakers, and really help sort of move education forward in our member jurisdictions. Why it's different this year is, one, because of COVID. We did have to go to more of a virtual model. But what we also did is we opened it up to pretty much any education officer within our jurisdictions. So whether that would be like a lodge education officer, a district education officer, a Grand Lodge or state education officer, because we didn't think that just, you know, we thought that there was more to be gained by having more people at the table. Very often, I think we can get a little siloed in what we see. We can also get a little, clouded in our vision. And so we really wanted to make it a true conference where there was both collaboration between the different jurisdictions. But the person who was the president this year, who ran the conference, was a gentleman named Scott Duball out of the Grand Lodge of Illinois. And his vision really was that the education officers who were there would leave with a full toolbox. They would leave with things they could take back to their lodges, their districts, however they chose to, you know, to use those tools that we gave them. But to develop them, play, let them build, you know, that Masonic bookcase, for lack of a better word, and then bring that back and then use that in their own states. And so because of that, we had some very interesting presentations this year. We actually had Brother Chuck Dunning do a presentation on how to lead a group discussion, how to lead a discussion along with practicum, allowing us to practice those skills. Because I think we tend to assume that our education officers have certain skills. When we turn them loose into our lodges, I think we make a lot of assumptions about what our brethren know. And this way we actually have documented. Here's how you do these things.
Well, see, I think just to jump in, no, this is great, because I think you guys are doing God's work, frankly, because anytime you hear about like having an education conference and not like a, you know, green beans conference or, you know, or officer training, which, you know, I've been to many of those, and I don't know how much I actually learned from those, but I can tell you what I didn't learn: education. And so obviously you fit right in with the show, right in with like-minded individuals. So to focus on that, you know, wholly, and to your point, now after a couple of years, actually putting some structure on that, that's amazing. So I definitely want to give you and the whole team that put that together some kudos for that, because that's one, no small undertaking, and two, something that's sorely needed in the fraternity. Remind me about how many years that this has been going on?
1949. So what are we looking at now?
Six, 7 years?
60? Yeah, something like that. I'm a theater major. Math is not, you know, anywhere near what I, you know.
You think after 60 years you would have solved education by now?
You would think, right? But they keep moving the goalposts on us, don't they? Really, if you ever want to get a bunch of Masons to start fighting, ask them for a definition of what Masonic education is.
You're funny you say that. Actually, I hear this is a freebie, because I did hear a couple years ago one of the masters of my mother lodge said that the whole program for the night was the worshipful master asked the brethren of the lodge for an open discussion, and the question was, which is more important, ritual or education? Discuss. And after about, you know, three bar brawls and, you know, a couple black eyes, like it I don't think they ever solved it, but to your point, like, that term is so loaded that it could mean lots of things. And so to your point, you're never going to run out of good ideas.
Well, you hope so. And see, we're getting ahead of sort of what I wanted to talk about tonight, because a lot of what my presentation was and a lot of what I spoke about was this idea of personalizing Masonry, kind of using the ideas you might get from, like, however you choose to apply them, whether it's like from good to great, using that sort of mindset, or even just understanding, you know, those connections in Masonry, how they need to really be fostered, and they need to be forged and also maintained. And so a lot of the work that I was doing, a lot of the work that I do in Ohio, and a lot of the work I was doing at this conference, was just trying to get educators to think about education in that way, to be less about, you know, lecturing from the pillar of truth and more about fostering these connections and fostering these educational opportunities. Again, I still haven't answered your original question, which was, why is the conference different this time? And I can go back there if you want, but truthfully, I can also go forward. And Jason's laughing at me again. See, it's the eyes, man. It just is.
Let's go back before we go forward.
Right on.
I'm laughing with you, not at you. It's a big difference.
You're laughing near me, I think.
That's Jason's pickup line. Yes.
If you're going to learn, you may as well learn from the master, right? Isn't that how that works? So we had Chuck Dunning doing leading a conversation, and that was really a phenomenal session. He brought in some of the things that he teaches for the Masonic Legacy Society, and he really allowed these breakout sessions, which were nice to do virtually. We were kind of concerned about how you would get brethren to talk, which really is the best part of any education conference, is letting the brethren talk. How are we going to do that? So we utilized the breakout rooms, and brethren were allowed to just practice leading a discussion. And the topic that we chose in the breakout session was, what were the moments that really struck you from your initiation? And, you know, brethren can talk about that forever. So the next session after lunch was mine, where I did personalizing masonry. And there's a style of presentation that I do that's based off of something called a Pecha Kucha, which is, it's a very condensed.
I love it. Love it.
I did one a couple of years ago at the conference about being a dad to a daughter with autism. And that I know that RJ really, really liked. And this year, so my presentation on personalizing masonry, the modification that I had done makes it an absolute tight 15 minutes. So it's 30 images that are on the screen.
Yep.
And these progress every 30 seconds.
And so not a true Pecha Kucha of 2020.
No, of 2020, because that's 640. You know that as educators, we are by nature long-winded. In fact, if you ask most Masons in Ohio, they will tell you that the way you get me to speak for 15 minutes is tell me I have 6 minutes and 40 seconds.
Right.
So,
or have the slides automatically advance and cut you off at the end.
Well,
so.
See, and that's actually kind of why I started doing those.
It's brilliant. Brilliant idea. So, I know we're like going off topic, but I really, can you explain how that works for people for the Pecha Kucha format? Sure. Because I think that it is a valuable tool for the Lodge.
Oh, and I think it's great for Masonic educators. It really is for two reasons, for two specific groups. One is the education officer who just has such a difficult time creating a presentation. And second is the guy who's, the guy who you can give, a stuffed brain to, and he can go on for 2 hours and make this a Masonic presentation. A Pecha Kucha is a presentation. The traditional one is 20 slides that are on screen in like a PowerPoint or Visio or however you choose to do it for 20 seconds each. And they progress automatically. Traditional ends up being a presentation of 6 minutes and 40 seconds. And so that allows you and actually forces you to be incredibly concise. You have to be very specific about the type of story that you're telling. Now, that is great for educators who are a little nervous or maybe don't really know how to do a presentation. Because if you can pick something you like say, I don't know anything. I like John Shearer's carpets, I can talk about John Shearer's carpets forever, but let's just pick 20 images and put a presentation, they go automatically, and then I can talk about this. It makes for an engaging presentation because the people looking at your presentation are watching the images and hearing you tell the story and give it a context. It is, for the neophyte education officer, it's a nice exercise. It also helps kind of train you in how to create a decent presentation. why I modified it for me is because, again, I talk too much, but by my modification is 30 images for 30 seconds. And that gives me it's 15 minutes. That's how long it is. That gives me, especially with masonry, because a lot of what we end up talking about is just some, we talk about some pretty deep things. And so it allows me to be a little bit more engaging, go a little bit more in depth, and tell a different type of story. And so if you are a really experienced educator, you know, our limitations really are our opportunities. And so try taking that 45-minute presentation that you do on the use of punctuation and ritual, give it a tight 15. And if you really want to make it interesting, the images you use, no faces, no words, just like the ones that I do might be a picture of my pocket knife, might be a picture of two guys walking in the woods, but you don't see their faces. It might be one time I think I used, there's a toy from the 1970s that's pretty much Farrah Fawcett's head that you're supposed to put makeup on that creeped me out. I mean, just different images meant to evoke different responses. Why it's wonderful from an education standpoint, your audience is engaged because we've all been to any number of presentations or, you know, where people just kind of reading the slides. The images that you choose, your audience sees them, you know, and they're engaging with the image. And quite often what they're wondering is, why in the world did you choose that particular right. image?
Burns in their brain. Exactly.
Oh, yeah. But then as the presenter, you are giving that context. You're telling your story. And because it is very visceral, those images that they're using, I mean, they remember them. They absolutely remember them. And if you're somebody who likes to play with, you know, rhetoric, you like to play with, I mean, crafting those is incredibly fun.
So that also reminds me of, we did an episode of the Masonic Roundtable where we did PowerPoint karaoke, where you have someone else pick the pictures for you, and you've never seen them before until you actually do your presentation live. And that was fun. And again, another tool that you guys could use is to have a brother put it all together.
How long ago did you guys do that?
Oh, a year and a half? A
couple of years.
2 years? Yeah, it's been a while.
Okay. About 2 years.
That's interesting. Because one of the conversations we had about the conference was, my background was I was trained as a high school teacher, and I had a methods instructor who said that was what you were supposed to do. That was like the ultimate test as a teacher, you know, kind of like going for your black belt was you'd write up your lesson and you would walk into a classroom, and whatever was on the blackboard, you couldn't touch it, but you had to use whatever was on the blackboard to teach your lesson. He said, if once you could do that, then, you know, you're good to go. And that would be fun. Like from a, you know, it's one of those things. Again, Masonic educators, it's amazing how if you get a room full of them, you can just kind of throw out anything and they can find a way to make it Masonic. You know, here's a shaving mug and brush. Make a Masonic presentation on this. And about 2/3 of your audience right now are going, yeah, totally. I know exactly how I would do that. And I know exactly how you want 3, 5, 7, or 30 yeah. minutes on it.
I've already submitted it to the Grand Lodge magazine. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, someone get the Philalethes on the line. Cause I'll do an in-depth expose on straight razors. So, we're talking about Pachacucha, RJ. And, I had sort of mentioned, the one that I had done at the conference a few years ago about my daughter. I know that that's something that you really responded to. So,
yeah, that's true. Sorry, I'm late, everybody. COVID shot number two knocked me out for a couple hours. Ooh. And I didn't even know. So anyway, that was one of it was a speech that changed the way I kind of looked at a lot of Masonic education, in particular, how you approached it. And if I'm totally honest, I think I would also say that it changed the way I viewed a lot about masonry too, specifically to the way you emotionally reacted to the way you were presenting. You had all the people in the audience like sucked into what you were talking about, and it was clutch.
Thank you. You know, and that's high praise. Like I said, it's incredibly high praise from you. And I had done that as a presentation that I had developed a while ago as I was working, you know, trying to figure out this Pecha Kucha format for myself. And I learned a lot doing it. So I presented my topic at the conference using that format in a way to also illustrate the concept of, as Masonic educators, it is much less about lecturing from the column of truth and fostering those connections, fostering those. If Masonry is a way that it's a lens that we use to view the world, try to understand it and our place in it, then that's what Masonic educators, we should try to do, is help facilitate those experiences, help give that context so we know how to view the world and how to understand our place in it and how to understand how it all comes together. And again, trying to do that in 15 minutes with all images is, you do what you can. After my presentation, we had a few more. We had Scott Dubal from Illinois. He did one on panel discussions. Again, we assume so much that our lodge education officers have those skills. They know how to do certain things. I mean, truthfully, in Ohio this year, we all of a sudden realized we sort of assume that our guys actually know the ritual enough that they can teach it to somebody else. We probably should check that in some way, shape, or form.
Nah.
Or at least have a check-in on that.
Pass.
pass. I mean, as probably there are a boatload of Masonic educators who will tell you that they get phone calls at, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 o'clock in the morning from somebody, you know, what's this word? What does this symbol mean? What, you know, and sometimes you have the answer and oftentimes you don't. But so Scott did a great presentation on this technique of a panel discussion, which was outstanding. And then we had Spencer Hammond, who is, I know that the Grand Lodge of Illinois claims him, but he's originally boy, and I'm hoping that, you know, I don't know. I don't even know why I say that. Probably just to get a rise out of RJ. But
Spencer will go to his death saying that he is Wisconsin all the way. So he's, yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. So you guys have that, you know, in common.
Yes. And he and I both are probably sitting here talking to you and also checking to see if Aaron Rodgers really is leaving the Packers today. So, anyway, Spencer is, if you've never heard him speak, he really is, he's just an amazing individual. He really is. The way that he views the world, the way that he can tie things together. And he did a really nice presentation, just kind of tying many things together about making things personal, making things quality, just really sort of investing of, pardon me, your time and talents in Lodge. And the goal really was, so the entire conference was to, for lack of a better word, enlighten and empower our education officers. That education doesn't have to be any one thing. It just has to kind of be. You know, it needs to be responsive to the needs of the brethren, that there are tools that you have and you can develop, and that we are empowering you to develop educational programs that are necessary, that are beneficial to your lodge. Because the best solutions in Masonry, best solutions in most institutions, don't come from a top-down directive. They really come from enlightening and empowering the grass level, ground level.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a good point because, you know, as Nick Johnson would say, Freemasonry is provincial, right? That it's yeah, local, it's hyper-local. And really, the best Masonic presentation is the one that brothers get to hear, right? It's interesting to them. Right. So it doesn't matter if it comes from, you know, the Grand Lodge or if it comes from the Masonic Roundtable or wherever. If no one cares about it, right, it doesn't have any value. I hate to say it. Well, so, yeah.
And I've told education officers who are struggling, I say, go into your lodge tonight and just ask the brethren, have you ever met a Mason out in the wild? And believe it or not, that is probably the most, like, every education officer should just kind of have that in their back pocket, because it's amazing how that can end up being, it can be amazing how that goes. The other one that I have used, because there's no ways you can take this. I will ask guys what their everyday carry is. So guys will just start whipping stuff out of their pocket, you know, coins, knives, you know, whatever. And so you start asking, well, you know, why do you carry this stuff? Like, what's the significance? What's the importance of this? And then you flip it and you say, well, what should a Mason's everyday carry be? And then that can go a couple different ways.
6 hour P223.
Yes. Or, you know, the Benchmade, you know, Griptilian, yes. I have over, yes, there, or
something, you know, 3D printed. Yeah.
Always. And as always, a stuffed brain.
Number eight. On your desk. Number eight.
Nice.
It's Opinel. Opinel 8. Spencer likes a 6. He likes the 6. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but Spencer's weird. So.
Okay.
Anyway. But if the idea is to allow brethren to connect, right? First off, they're always going to sit there. I mean, guys love to kind of show off their toys, you know, things they carry. But then when you flip it and say, well, what should a Mason carry with them? Well, hold on. And sometimes that ends up being the more spiritual aspect, you know, or the, not spiritual, but, you know, the, you know, the faithful breast and the, you know, the civil tongue and all that. And sometimes I have had guys say, you know, I really should carry a $5 bill for, you know, relief and charity. Oh, you know, I really should, you know, carry these things. And so, again, it's amazing what you can do when you just start asking the brethren and you let them talk. And I think many of us will say that the best educational programs are the ones where, as education officer, you say one sentence and you don't talk for the next 15, 20, 30 minutes.
Because you forgot your line and you're waiting for the prompter to line.
That's exactly right.
Hecatomb. Well, you know, that's the one. Hecatomb. No, that's the word.
Every time you ask for a line, this is the, like, I'll be in the middle of a lecture and I'll look over to my prompter and the joke is always, my brother? Because that's how everything starts. And I'm just like, yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. Thanks. Thanks for that.
Thanks, Dad. That, we need Masonic, exactly. Dad jokes. Yeah.
Yeah.
There are a lot of them. So let's see. I think that was sort of the rundown of the conference. But again, the focus this year really was, and I'm going to keep using that phrase, enlighten and empower, was to bring more people to the table, you know, so that it's not just the high muckety mucks. It wasn't supposed to be a summit meeting as much as let's get the table to be bigger, so there's more people at it. Let's let there be much more of an idea exchange. And let's let everybody leave with, for lack of a better word, a goodie bag full of ideas and full of just things that they can bring back, whatever they choose to do with them. After those presentations, we had our business meeting. And one of the nicest things about that is we actually have our jurisdiction reports, where we have a lodge where the jurisdictions look it up and just sort of say, here's who we are. Here's what we're doing. Did you all hear my dog and hear my wife yell? Is it okay?
No.
Thank you. It's so sweet of you to say that.
We totally did get scared by, okay, that shrieking. Yes.
I'm trying.
That's your coughing, anyway, dog, right?
No, Trouble's the coughing dog. Trouble's the coughing dog. This is Darla. That's the dog who, her bed is right behind me, and it's bedtime. So it's bedtime for Darla, which is a song, I'm sure, from the 40s, probably Gershwin. And I totally forgot my point, and in a second I may have to take a little break. And
Darla will let you forget.
Yeah. Take care of Darla. Right. The jurisdiction report is incredibly interesting from just a structural standpoint, because as much as we assume that our education officers know certain things, it is very easy for us as educators, as Masonic, as Masons, to just assume that the way the things are in our lodge, district, whatever, are the same everywhere.
So So you got, what'd you say, 12 districts that are coming together for this?
Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Minnesota, Missouri, Michigan.
It's definitely cross-jurisdictional then.
Right.
So, like, what's stopping this thing, which it's been going on for a good 60 years, from actually becoming, like, a big national thing? Like, I mean, you're halfway there.
Living on a prayer.
It's those eyes, man. And the Bon Jovi references.
Dude.
I think there are two things, truthfully. One is that I think up until this year, we were focused on just a certain level of education officer to make it a smaller summit meeting. I think that that has its use, but I think really the decision that really was led by Scott Duvall in Illinois to open that up to all officers was a good thing.
I don't know, because you know, the more I think about it, some of these tools are, you know, universal, like, educational tools, and it seems kind of a shame for it to be, I don't know, not restricted. Restricted is not the right word, because you've had people from other jurisdictions attend, but just...
I mean, there's people who came from Canada, British Columbia, and all of those.
Right, Manitoba.
And, yeah, and so when I really didn't know much about this thing, and the only reason that Scott even knew anything about it was because when we were working more heavily, I think, with the Grand Lodge of Illinois, really a lot of this stuff is kind of held up in committee, meaning the heads of committees in different states are really the only people who are going to this. And I think over time, there's probably some amount of kind of empathetic attitude that who else is going to care about this stuff. And the only real reason that, like, Scott and I went was because Scott was the state education officer, or newly incoming. And we knew about it because the guys who kind of had the reins for a while, who was Ed Rund and Ray Babinski, those guys have been, you know, doing it for many years. And, I knew Ray for a long time, and he never mentioned this stuff. I've been on the education committee, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, left and came back, and he didn't mention it then. So it's really interesting, and maybe it was just kind of the dynamic or whatever, that they expected only, like, the state education officers to come together. And there were more states that were involved. I heard from one source that one state in particular thought that it was a waste of time and stopped, you know, going or participating. And so, like, that's the kind of attitude that I think solidifies this mindset in a lot of the people who participate. Like, yeah, who cares? But the thing is when I told a few people about this a couple years ago, I told Kevin Holman about it, and Kevin was like, you know, Virginia Mason. And he says, well, where the heck is the Mid-Atlantic, you know, Masonic Education Conference? You know, this is crazy. Why don't we all have these kind of things regionally? Mm-hmm. Because the idea is it's really the separate idea of like when all the Grand Masters get together, we have the Midwest Conference of Grand Masters.
Right.
There's these sectional things. Mm-hmm. And the education portion is like the other side of the coin, right? We have the administrative and the actual job. Right. So you got both of these elements on the coin, but one never gets to sit at the big boy table. And so when Scott and I had talked about the conference, you know, a couple of years ago, like, I was just kind of bummed out because I went to this thing and I think there were like less than 26 people. I want to say I counted 22 in the room at one point.
I was going to ask because, like, I remember
it was like 22 people. That's
last year, the year before
2019.
Yeah. Okay. So it was pre-COVID, but you were still like really bummed that. Because of the potential of this thing and the longevity, like how long this thing's been going.
And it's Grand Lodge sanctioned and funded for the most part.
And so that's when I first heard about it was when you talked about it on that.
Yeah, same
and that's
here.
When I was like flipped out. I was like, really? There's this such a thing and nobody's going? Are you kidding me? You know?
Yeah. But I think like by talking about it and getting more people energized about it and by having like these kind of speakers like Chad and Spencer. And 2 years ago when we went, it was we had our keynote, right? It was Dan Gardner.
Right. From,
Montana. Yeah. So he's the Grand Sec, and he talked about some of the ritual stuff and gave a great talk, and he blew it away. Like, there are so many guys who would love to go to a regional conference like that, but I just think that it's kind of underplayed. But I'm really hoping that by talking about this and the programming that Chad and Scott and everybody did, like the upcoming folks, you know, I hope we take down their website on accident from too much traffic.
All right, so what would be required in setting up the Mid-Atlantic maybe conference on Masonic education? What would it take?
Somebody with a dream and, you know, and
a dream is a wish your heart makes. Okay, so tell me what would really take.
Somebody to freaking do it.
Yeah.
So Chad can tell you a little bit about the logistics, but you know, there's a president, first, second, and third vice president, and an executive secretary treasurer. And so each one of those guys is usually, you know, somebody who is kind of somebody in one of the Grand Lodges. So you really have to have that Grand Lodge buy-in. And typically these guys are the voting members. So like Scott was the president. Then, so like next year, it's Thompson.
Josh Thompson out of Missouri.
Yeah. Out of Missouri. And so then it'll be those, the hosts, and whoever the president is, that's kind of who hosts it. And, I mean, there could be so much amazing down there, right? I mean, who would you have in the Mid-Atlantic? You'd have Virginia, West Virginia, North and South Carolina,
New York, New Jersey, if you want to go up that
far. Yeah, Pennsylvania. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
I mean, New Jersey has their leadership conference, and they are nice enough to invite, you know, like I've gone to it, and that's nice because it's opportunity for you to kind of talk and cross pollinate that way. I have always sort of said that people think things are much harder than they are. And I kind of take my inspiration from those old Andy Hardy movies from the, the turn of the last century. You know, I've got a barn, I've got some lights, I got some costumes, let's put on a show. It is amazing what you can get done with just a phone call. It's amazing what can happen with just an email.
I was just going to say, that's exactly like what Joe Martinez and then Kevin Homan have done with the Esotericon, right? Jason and I are really more spiritual advisors than anything.
I was going to say, you and I had something to do with that.
So I had a little bit of something. But yeah, you know, so
it's Jason Shamey.
I like to call it
Masonry.
Camp Masonry. Yeah, that's another good example. So, and that's the big takeaway, right?
Nathan Tweedy, Cooperstown Masonicon.
It doesn't take, you know, a whole party planning committee to say, you know what, I see a gap. I want to have an event, and it doesn't have to be, it can be as big or as small as you'd like it to be, and then just say, let's hang out together and talk about X. And you'll be surprised how many other brothers would love to just sit and talk about whatever, you know, whatever the flavor is.
There's Ohio Masons have heard me say this. It's, I kind of laughingly call it my traveling Wilburys philosophy or theory of masonry, right? Traveling Wilburys, they pretty much put, you know, they put some pretty cool guys in a room just to kind of see what would happen. When it comes to masonry, you know that pretty much most Masons are going to be good men, right? You put enough good men in a room, something's going to happen. Something good is going to come out of that. If you don't go to Grand Lodge or some kind of Masonic event and walk away with a new friend, a new contact, somebody who, you know, has somehow enriched your life, I don't know what you're doing. And it really was that idea that was kind of behind something that we do in Ohio called our traveling Masonic road shows. You know, getting back to your point about it being simpler than people think. What we do is, it's something that happens with the Grand Lodge Education Committee. The guys have wanted to sort of hold a conference in their neck of the woods. Well, heck, talk to the ed rep, talk to the education committee, tell us kind of a theme you want. Fine. We'll provide the structure. We'll bring the speakers. You provide the cookies, and we'll give you a day of education, you know, in your neck of the woods. And whether it's 20 guys or 120 guys who show up, doesn't matter. The number of guys who show up are the number of guys who show up, and it's going to be, you know, a great experience. From our end, you know, as an education committee, it allows us to feature a number of speakers who might not necessarily get outside of their neck of the woods. You know, Taylor Kleinick, Alexander Herbert, you know, Dan Hrinko. I mean, guys who might not necessarily get to different parts of the state. And it also allows us, with that idea, again, enlighten and, you know, empower. Once guys get a taste, man, it's amazing what they thirst for next. So,
all right, it's not all rainbows and sunshine. What's the what are some of the challenges that you guys have? I ask questions for a living.
Yes. There's the challenges that we have. I mean, whether it's, there's a couple ways to answer your question. Let's go with the conference first. I think with the conference, kind of like RJ was saying, the fact that we as a conference had limited it in the past to Masons at a certain level in the organization, I think hurt us. I think also because there are those, like there's the, you know, there's the National Conference of Grandmasters, and there was a little bit more, I don't say emphasis, but, you know, if you're a Grand Lodge, you can really only, you have the resources to send people certain places, and you got to pick something. If you're looking for the most bang for your buck, 12 jurisdictions in a room full of 26 guys gives you a certain return on your investment, or a room full of 70 some people from, you know, Canada, Prince Hall, all kinds of different jurisdictions with a number of different speakers and with the power and, you know, agency to really make some changes, that gives you a different return on your buck. And I'm not blaming anybody. Like, that just is, it's just the truth. But I think us opening it up absolutely is going to, you know, we're hopeful that that will change that. I think the other obstacles we have right now have to do with COVID. I mean, truly, I mean, it costs money to travel. It costs money to do things. I think that one thing that Scott really did, and the Grand Lodge of Illinois who fostered this, was leaning into that virtual presence.
So do you guys use Zoom as a platform this year?
We did.
And that's interesting. What was the total turnout, like total headcount, or just ballpark? 5 or 50 yeah. or?
I actually have the Excel spreadsheet up here right now. So
you're my kind of guy.
Let's see. Total headcount was about 70, 75.
Okay. So that's not bad. And the reason I ask is, it's been my observation, right, wrong, or indifferent, that the virtual masonry is starting to wane a little bit, right? Because we're all burned out because it's so easy to flip on a Zoom meeting, unless you're in South Carolina, that
it might be easier now that the Grand Lodge sessions are over.
Touche, sir. So, but that there's so much of it now that you really don't know if it's a good value of time. And so I have started to see some of the attendance goes down. So, because you can, you know, you can have a happy hour with your lodge members, and that could be just as valuable as something that a whole committee has planned for a year. And so you're competing with that, right? It's reducing the cost of entry, if you want to use like economics terms, right? And now everyone has access to reach brethren from around the world, and you're competing with that. You're competing with that, plus all the things we talked about pre-COVID. You're competing with Netflix. You're competing with, all those other, you know, Xbox, et cetera.
Well, see, and this is where I'm going to get... I've been on my soapbox pretty much this entire, you know, time today, but I'll get
back. I have a mute button. Again. That's okay.
Thank you. You may have to use it. The brethren are going to find it. I mean, as silly as that sounds,
I agree.
One of the nice parts about this is, you know, yes, there's a proliferation of podcasts and there's a proliferation of sort of, you know, virtual meetings. We've done it in Ohio. But, and it ends up being, in some ways a lot of the same guys who go to that, but there's always two or three different ones. And if you post it, there's always a few who kind of check it out. And again, whether it's theater or really good quality Masonic education, once you get them in the door once, they start asking about it again. And yes, it's a different type of experience than going to your lodge, different type of experience than watching Falcon and the Winter Soldier. It's a different type of experience than, which, by the way, that last episode is a Masonic education lesson in of itself. And I am waiting to see who's going to write that up first.
Sounds like a Midnight Freemasons article.
Oh, no, it's a Mike Jarzabek article.
Yeah, totally. Yes. It's a totally Mike Jarzabek article.
Get on it. Get on it, Mike.
One of the wonderful things about Masonry, right, it has kind of lowered the cost of entry, but it's not necessarily a bad thing. Because there are plenty of guys who are in, for lack of a better word, crappy lodges. You know, and I shouldn't...
Absolutely.
It's probably the wrong term to use, but we'll call it a term of art. You know, that what they came to Masonry looking for, their lodge only... Sorry, Jason. Go ahead.
I was going to make a joke, and that was going to be the Ken Jeong community, I'll allow it, reference. But go ahead. Right. Please.
Benji community, after we get off of here. Anyway, they came to lodges looking for certain things, and unfortunately the lodge is only providing maybe half of that or a portion of that. And so whereas we might have lost those guys in the past because they aren't getting what they were looking for, now they can find it virtually. They can, if they do want to hear about John Shearer's carpets, or they want to listen to 2 hours on the use of punctuation and ritual, through the use of virtual Masonry, they can find those meetings and they can make those connections. And still go to their local lodge and have amazing cherry pie. So.
Excellent.
I never got cherry pie in my lodge. I just got like Wegmans cookies or Costco cookies.
We have a cook in my lodge who's, whereas it's kind of hard to find good, gumbo in Appalachian, Ohio, I'll tell you, he makes some good stuff. So,
okay. That's exciting.
Excellent. So, we're kind of at the point now where we get to the final question of the night. And what we'll do is we'll ask, I'm gonna throw a question out with a twist. There's always a plot twist, kind of like the last episode of the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And tonight's question...
Captain America and the Winter Soldier.
Son of a gun.
That's right. Exactly right.
It's almost been a week. I'll allow it. So the final question tonight is, what is your favorite type of Masonic education? But, because I know most of y'all, you can't say anything esoteric or philosophic. You have to choose something else. What is your favorite type of Masonic education? And or another aspect beyond that, of what that brings to the table. All right. So what we'll do is we will start with latecomer Robert Johnson. Hope you're feeling better, buddy. How's that COVID shot wearing off?
Calling him out.
I feel so great.
That's some microchip talking.
Yeah, I got the microchip.
Third eye is shipping in nicely, by the way.
Bill Gates has been listening the whole time. I think my favorite...
He's a fan.
He loves the show. Just saying. Everybody out there listening, Bill Gates of Microsoft loves the Masonic Roundtable.
Wow.
Guaranteed. My favorite type of Masonic education is... I mean, this was... I thought for a second, I was like, oh no, John took away my, philosophical kind of thing that we all. I think my favorite type of education is definitely the history of the ritual when we talk about motivations and when we talk about how the Masonic ritual traveled around. And I have said it before, and no disrespect, because it's not generally this way today, but Masonry may have been one of the first multi-level marketing schemes, right? Because the way people, It was Amway, right? I mean, we walked around, we peddled degrees for you know, dollars, and you know, maybe they were people who were allowed to give those degrees, maybe they weren't, right? And when we read about all these things, and we read about people who sold the ritual, rewrote the ritual, printed the ritual, reprinted that and sold it and traveled around to deliver lectures and took pay to do it. I mean, this was a living for a lot of folks. I think that stuff is just fascinating to me. And I find it fascinating that certain states totally hate some people, like, you know, Rob Morris. It doesn't have a great reputation some places, and other places he's loved. But that kind of stuff is what I find just fascinating. And yeah, that would be what I say. I'll plug out Whence Came You. So I hope you guys listen to WCY podcast, the Whence Came You podcast, Sunday nights, 9:30. And if you like aliens and stuff, I have a stupid project on the side with another brother called Beyond the Fourth Veil. Nothing to do Masonic, but it's all like kind of spooky stuff.
You can't pierce through veils without a little bit of masonry in there. So congrats.
Well, that's why we did the fourth, you know, yeah, Beyond the Fourth Veil is kind of a...
It's one more.
It's just one more.
One more veil.
It's one more. Yeah.
All right, so while I switch over to Jason, yeah, all of you in the chat, go ahead and drop in, what is your favorite aspect of Masonic education?
I thought there were seven veils. Instead of piercing them, they got removed. Never mind. It was a different story.
Fourth.
Also, Robert, I hate you because my favorite part of Masonic education, or my favorite genre of Masonic education, deals with the formation and the changing of the ritual.
And that's not something to hate me over. That's awesome.
Well, you took my gusto, man. No, so from my standpoint, I love the idea of rituals as oral traditions and initiatory rites. And I think you can glean a whole lot from the changes that were made. And of course, the only reason we know why the change or what changes were made is because at some point in time, brothers broke their obligations and wrote them down. So we as historians are heavily indebted to the Masons who broke their obligations throughout the past 300 years, because they wrote down what wasn't supposed to be written down. But that's the only way that we can tell how the ritual has changed. And if we can look at how the ritual has changed in the socioeconomic context of the times, we can start to piece together why. And you see this with worldwide oral traditions that are passed down from generation to generation to generation. It's like a bad game of telephone. They change ever so slightly, sometimes dramatically, to fit the context, to alter the message to fit a certain people in a certain context with certain lessons that you want to have maintain relevancy. So figuring out why the ritual has changed, and why is one of the things that I'm really interested in and like to study.
All righty then. All right, Hammy, you're next. Oh,
and buy tickets to EsoterraCon June 12th. Go to ma.esotericon.com, and tickets are $15. So pick them up.
Virtual only, right? We're out of all the cool swag bag stuff, so.
Yep, you didn't jump on it, but that's why tickets are $15 instead of $50. So,
awesome.
It's still going to be good.
It absolutely will be, because there's Masonic education and not Masonic education. All right, Hammy, what's your favorite part of Masonic education?
So, you know, I love doing the history side of it a lot. You know, obviously, because I, you know, I've done the stuff about Ben Franklin and the presidents and so forth. But lately, what I'm really learning, and this will put me in a ringer on this, but it's not, I mean, it is esoterics, but it's I won't define it as that, even though the book is titled Esoterica, because I don't really think of what Albert Pike talks about in that book as, quote, esoterics. He breaks down the meanings behind each symbol. And, you know, and I don't really see that as, because esoteric is, breaks down to meaning secret knowledge that can only be understood by those within the know. And I don't see that as this, because I see what he talks about in there as almost in some ways common knowledge. In that environment, but still there's plenty of it that is available to anyone. And that's the kind of stuff I like. I mean, it's, you know, that you, if you, you know, sit down and read about a symbol, you can sit there and go, oh yeah, I can find that in Webster's even to define what the compasses are, you know, and it doesn't break it down to too deep. I mean, so deep that you can't follow it or understand it just because you're not a Mason. But the other side to it is, if you are, you understand more. That's all. But I actually like that kind of stuff.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. Thank you, Mike the intern. Handing it over to Brother Chad. How about you? Since you're all on the committee and all. Oh, you're still muted. But still can't hear you.
I was saying, read my lips. That's the,
there
that's
you
the
go.
Next trick. Is
no new taxes.
Learn that skill. Right. I'm going to be a little contrarian. And this may end up getting me the, you know, the label of being the Leo Buscaglia of Masonry, which is probably a reference lost on most of your audience, but that's okay. The type of Masonic education that I like is the stuff that helps me connect. It's the stuff that helps me understand my world better. And whether that's seeing Masonry through somebody else's eyes or seeing it through a different lens, I mean, I kind of, you know, joke about, you know, using shaving as a Masonic educational program. But oftentimes, if it's explained in a different way, that means I can look at it a different way, which means I make sense out of it a different way. And if Masonry is all about, you know, understanding your world and your place in it, anything that allows me to connect with my brethren, connect with the deity, connect with that, you know, understanding of what, you know, the life, the world is all about, and as silly as it sounds, makes me feel something, even if it's just, oh, I'm not alone. That's the kind of stuff that I really go for. Because, you know, I love history. I love the esoteric parts of it. I love learning about ritual, and that's wonderful. But, you know, Masonry in my mind can be so much more, and it's kind of fun to explore what the limits of Masonry, what they are and what they can be.
Well said. Thank you for serving. Thank you for everything you do. Thank you for everything you do for the future of education in Masonry.
Well, I do want to say this has been an absolute honor, although I realized that I think I've been talking most of the time. And so, you know, breaking my own rule about, you know, being an educator, don't talk, but,
we're okay.
You guys know that I'm a
We've
fan.
We've got the
you
mute button.
That... Excellent.
We're going to pet a coochie you next time.
I do it. I think it'd be fun. I do it right now. No, I'm a fan, and I really love what you guys do here. I think it's incredibly valuable, which is, you know, why I'm a fan and why I keep engaging. And I draw inspiration from what you all do every week. So thank you for that. And thank you for this opportunity.
Aw, thank you very much. It's been fun. You've been a blast. All right, let's start to wrap things up. For me, you know, surprisingly, one thing that I like about Masonic education, a couple years ago, we had I was visiting at the very first Grand Master's visit to one of the lodges in our district, and so it was, of course, it's a big deal, right? With the beginning of the year, the Grand Master is there, and you really want to, you know, really polish all the brass. You want to make everything perfect, and the Grand Master comes up and starts, he opens his little portfolio and starts talking about the history of the lodge that he's visiting right then and there. And he's going on and on about how, you know, this hardware store was down the street, and then this brother went here, and just like going into deep history about just this one lodge. And I found out after the fact that, like, this was not uncommon. This Grand Master did his homework and did research on every single lodge he visited. And so it wasn't the canned presentation that, you know, if you travel around enough that year, you get to hear the same talk again and again. No. This Grandmaster was very attention to detail, very hyper-local, very interested in the history of that particular provincial part of Masonry. And I found that to be fascinating. So if I'm not talking philosophics or esoterics, right, to make me a better person, history is a big umbrella. And it interests me more when you see history that's specific to this one lodge or to a brother from this lodge or the brother that, you know, that died on the Titanic, right? Those kind of things are very, very specific. And
Oscar Scott Woody.
You guessed it. That's right.
Was one of several.
It makes history real. It makes it exciting, and it really shows the fraternal bond that we have that not only crosses geographic boundaries but time as well. So with that, I want to thank all of you very much for watching. We'll see you next week. Keep searching for more light. Have a good night.
Wow.